What if a group of women decided that they live to live outside of society?
Hi, I'm Nick Gillespie with Reason TV, and today we're talking with Anne Fortier. She's the New York Times bestselling author of Juliet, a novel, and she's got a new book out called The Lost Sisterhood, which is about ancient Amazons and contemporary academics. Anne, thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Why did you decide to write about Amazons and academics?
Well, I am a bit of an academic myself, I have to confess, and Amazons, I think I've been interested in Amazons for a long, long time, and I think that I might be a little anachronistic, but I think it's simply that as a woman, when you reach back in history and you try to find freedom-loving women,
right.
Well, obviously, the most freedom-loving women ever in the history of
Mythology or whatever. Okay.
Yes.
So is this a good time to be an Amazon, or do modern women need Amazons? Because there seems to have been, you know, a kind of, at least on a general level, there's equality of opportunity, equality of outcome, certainly at the higher level of kind of business and politics. You're Danish, of Danish descent. There's a prime minister of Denmark is a woman. So why do we need Amazons anymore, or do we need them more than ever?
I still think that that there's a great physical inequality, and we can't really do anything about that unless we start sort of genetically modifying
right.
women. And I'm not sure we want to do that,
right.
You know. So the story that I'm telling is a very physical story.
Right.
It has a lot to do with being in shape, mm-hmm. in physical shape, and through that finding a strength
right.
to also mentally. Look for equality and so on. So there is that. There has to be that when you're talking about the
Well, I mean, and that's interesting. And to talk a little bit about the book, I mean, basically, it's a woman, an academic at Oxford, who is kind of obsessed with Amazons, and then she starts finding clues to a kind of ancient archaeological digs about Amazons in North Africa and the Mediterranean. And it goes back and forth between the story of Amazons in the past as well as the contemporary academic. And, you know, one of the things that's fascinating about the book, and I'm thinking since something like Umberto Eco's The Name of the Rose, which came out in 1980, you know, and through things like The Da Vinci Code by Dan Brown, Philippa Gregory's, you know, massively popular historical fictions. This seems to be a great time for historical fiction that is seriously researched, as well as like really, you know, good plots and action. Why do you think we're so interested in delving back, not just into the past, but into a really richly detailed researched past?
Well, I do think that human beings, it's a very good sign, I think, that we're interested in the past, because in the past we can see a lot of answers, I think, or certainly a lot of warning signs about how to not proceed
right.
in the present. I do also think that in this day and age, you know, anybody in our society has the money to buy a book. It's about priorities. You might choose not to spend your money on a book, but anybody may do so. Time is another matter.
Mm-hmm.
So for someone to actually pick up a book, and you know that yourself, and I know that, and anybody who sees this, is it worth it?
Right.
Am I really going to invest that much time in this book? It has to be pretty good value, right?
Right.
So we want something that teaches us something. It can't just be entertainment. It has to have some solid historical, you know, weight behind
So, I mean, part of historical fiction, I mean, and the creation of a world that we can really inhabit, at least imaginatively, is part of the value proposition of contemporary literature.
I think so.
Yeah.
And even though we have all sorts of 3D things in film now, and, you know, all these electronic ways of recreating the past and even imagined worlds, I still do think that you don't quite make people walk in the ancient world mm-hmm. unless they do it through a narrative mm-hmm. where they can identify with the characters. And I think that a book, more so than images, will actually allow people, you know, individually to enter that ancient world.
So you're not, a lot of authors, you know, complain and bitch and moan all the time about, you know, and not without reason about how, you know, nobody reads anymore, et cetera. I mean, you've found obviously Juliet, was a best-selling book, so that did well. But you're not worried about the future of print because you think it provides something unique for contemporary readers?
Well, and this is why we should applaud people like Dan Brown. Mm-hmm. You know, I met so many people on airplanes, you know, men in particular, who said, I haven't touched a novel in 20 years. Mm-hmm. I'm reading again. And they have rediscovered the joy of reading and the riches you can find,
right,
even in fiction.
Well, I know or especially in fiction, right? We should say. I went to grad school because I was reading novels all the time, and then when I got to grad school, I was like, I don't have time to read. So I understand the time pressure. Talk about your next book, not to get ahead of The Lost Sisterhood, but you will be moving to a different time, a historical time. Just briefly sketch that for us.
Exactly. We're going to Paris in the next one, past and present. Mm-hmm. And I just had a meeting with the editor yesterday.
Uh-huh.
And we're still
this is Catherine de Medici's Paris?
It is. Yeah. It is Catherine de Medici's Paris.
So can you just set up the scenario?
Absolutely. Yeah. What I find so interesting about Paris at this time is that this is a time when there was great political opposition against the whole menagerie of the leadership.
Right.
It was later, even at the time, dismissed as a religious skirmish between Catholics and Protestants. But really, it was a political disagreement and a furious resistance, and it culminates in the St. Bartholomew's Night Massacre, which I would argue is more of a political thing.
Oh, than a religious thing. And this, of course, is one of the most famous slaughters of Protestants by, Catholic forces.
Exactly. Yeah. And so what I look so much forward to doing with this book is to show it is not so much driven by the church. It's not the church that's the great villain of the Inquisition. It's his political leaders who see this as a convenient tool to stir up resentment, to seize people's property, because that's what you could do. If someone was, convicted, even before the trial, you could just seize their property, because these kings and queens were desperate for money at the time. It's a classical scenario. So I just can't wait to get started looking at it.
And that, like The Lost Sisterhood, will go back and forth. Now, let's talk a little bit about ideas, because your work combines history, plot, and ideas that are specifically kind of libertarian or classical liberal. I mean, they're about limits on state power, the ways in which certain individual rights get trampled. How did you come to your views about what we at Reason like to call free minds and free markets, and why is fiction a particularly good way to explore them?
Well, I was a late bloomer in many ways, mm-hmm. and certainly politically, because I grew up in Denmark, and as most of us know, I think Denmark is a vastly socialist society.
Right.
It is so beautifully socialist that people don't even realize it. Mm-hmm. It's you grow up in this, if you want to use an example from popular culture, The Matrix is an excellent way of looking at how you grew up as a Dane. So fortunately, someone unplugged me one day. I was flushed out.
How did that happen? Was it a book that you read, or something you saw, or?
Well, I think I've probably personally felt the instinct for a long time, ever since I was a teenager, toward this independence and the rebellion. But I didn't know. I couldn't put words on it.
Right.
And when I look back on my university studies and my dissertation, and when I look at a film I produced back then, it's it was before I really knew what I was.
Mm-hmm.
so it was, I encountered, this when I left Denmark for the first time. I met the man who's now my husband,
right,
Jonathan Forche, and who's,
a hardcore libertarian.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And
absolutely.
I mean, before you left to write novels full time, you worked at the Institute for Humane Studies, which has been, since the early 60s, have been kind of bringing libertarian ideas to students, college students and graduate students. So you're fully in the mix. But why is fiction, why do you find fiction, and particularly historical fiction, a good vehicle for kind of discussing ideas? And it's your The Lost Sisterhood, which is a great read, it's not didactic in any kind of heavy-handed or clubbing way. But like a lot of novels, there's a lot of ideas running through that. Why does fiction work to convey ideas, as opposed to, why didn't you write a philosophy book?
Well, obviously, you know, for me, I write fiction. It's what I do. I couldn't sit down and write. As many teachers over the years have told me, this is not fiction, Anna. You know, so, and economists are wonderful at discussing things and presenting things to people who care to read about economics. But that is just one segment of the readership. And there is a vast segment of the readership who would not read economics and who go to fiction. And I believe that most people, if they actually sit down and think it through, they probably are libertarian. You know, if they're right thinking people.
How would you define, well, of course, well, if they're right thinking, they agree with you and they happen to be libertarian. No. But when you define, how do you define libertarian then in that sense? Like, how are most people libertarian?
Well, okay, so how are most people? They would never, you know, we shouldn't think about it necessarily in this way, but realize that being told what's good for you and having other people make decisions for you is not a good thing.
Right.
It will not lead to prosperity or happiness overall.
And is that the, for you, is that the ultimate message of the Lost Sisterhood?
Well, I have to be very, very careful, yeah. Right? And I will say that there was a long speech at the end of this book, and I wouldn't go as far as to say it was John Galt's speech,
right.
Take two, but it was pretty long and it was pretty explicit, and that has been cut down by various editorial attempts. So I'm as you say, it's not, it doesn't hammer home some sort of message, but I hope to raise a lot of questions about the choices we make.
Right.
And by being provocative and saying, what if a group of women decided that they live outside of society and bend the spoon and override the rules and regulations and norms that society have set up for people?
Well, it is, we will leave it there. No, and it's the book is The Lost Sisterhood. It's a novel of ancient Amazons, contemporary academics. It's by Anne Fortier. Thank you so much for talking to us.
Thanks for having me.
For Reason TV, I'm Nick Gillespie.